Yeah, keep going. We'll
No,
start it
I'm
like
just.
we'll just do go Joe Rogan styles. I always like how he just like starts the podcast just starts halfway
He
in a
goes boom.
conversation.
Yeah. Well, I've just been looking after the kids. My wife's been away for a couple of weeks. A couple of weeks. God, it feels like a couple of weeks. She's been away for 2 days, and she's coming back today. She's been away since Tuesday, but yeah, it's been
Do
pretty
look a
full on.
bit tired, Marcus.
Yeah. Thank
This
you. Yeah, I know.
I'm kidding, you don't actually, but no, seriously. I keep laughing because, you know, we had a role reversal with me being the main income earner, and hubby used to work in IT, and I was stayed home with the kids for years and trying to do my business in the background. And now he's working with me, which is wonderful because the business could never grow without him because I need that IT and tech support. But school holidays, which we're having now, and I know you're having soon, hey, but
Boom,
he's
next
looking
week, yeah.
up. Okay, so he looks after the kids while I'm at work, and I come home and I can see he's exhausted. And I mean, now the kids are big, you know, that back then I was breastfeeding and changing
Yeah.
diapers. So he's got them like fully grown, but you get home and you can see he's knackered. It's hard work. It's really
It's
hard
hard
work.
work on so many different levels, isn't it? You're thinking on so many different levels, and it's yeah, it is hard work. And also, what's interesting as a dad is how much they default to Emma, all the time. And actually, but when it's just me, then they have to come to me, and it's just a different dynamic. And it's, the same, like, oh, you're doing this wrong. No, mom doesn't do it like this. Or, it's like, no, I'm going to do it my way. But it's, yeah, it's a definitely different dynamic. And
It's different.
because you've got, yeah, you're not being sort of, not ignored is the wrong word, but it's like you're not, they don't look to you, normally to me. They don't normally
No,
look to me.
same in our house. But I have to say, my husband is much better at empowering the kids to take responsibility for their own stuff. Whereas I just, you know, because I just get there and I just do it. If they take too long, I'll just like, I'll just do it for them. Whereas he is much more patient than me. So he will sit there and
Actually, you
he'll
know
be like,
what? That's a really good point. That's because I
he
just
will
realized I was
sit
doing that
there
yesterday.
and
Yeah. I'm
he
saying, right.
doesn't care how long they take. He'll sit there and make them persevere through whatever it is they have to do. And the sense of accomplishment that they have afterwards. I have, like, I've said to him, if we ever homeschool again, because we homeschooled for a couple of years, I was like, if we ever do it again, you will be doing it. I will not be doing it because he is so much better with the kids at that than I ever am.
Yeah, no,
Dads just
absolutely.
have that
Well,
more of a grounded, I don't know, there's just something
you
about
know,
it.
but you're right, because it's true. I did that yesterday. I suddenly realized I was getting them to do things and jobs, and like you said, because I suddenly look around, it's like everything's really messy. It's like, why is it so messy? And it's like, well, then I get everybody to chip in, the kids to chip in, and it's yeah, it's about taking responsibility. You're absolutely right. And on the homeschooling thing, I mean, I take my hats off to parents that homeschool, because my only venture into homeschooling was during lockdown, when you were forced homeschooling, and I sort of did it for a morning, and I just couldn't do it. It was, I mean, Emma was so much better at it than me, because two different kids, two different ages, two different sort of needs, and I just couldn't do it. I mean, I found it really difficult. So yeah, I take my hats off to anybody that homeschools. I think it's amazing.
Definitely, absolutely. I was thinking today, you need to like write a little ditty, little guitar intro for our chin wags. What do you reckon?
Hey, I'm very. Hey, listen, I've just come back from a Bruce Springsteen concert. He's one of my heroes. In Hyde Park, and I took my son, actually, who's 12. It's his first concert, but
I'm
yeah,
really
absolutely
jealous. You
inspires.
guys have amazing artists over there. I saw Hilary Dorian had photos of her at Rod Stewart's concert. He's 78, and I'm. You guys have all the best artists over there. We just, especially here in Perth, we get nobody. We're just too, they didn't even know we exist. We're too far away.
Yeah, well, I think Bruce comes to Australia, doesn't he? I'm sure he comes to Australia a few times, but I
Good
don't know whether he
luck.
comes to Perth. But yeah, it was great. And Bruce is 73, and I was looking at him, and it's amazing. I mean, I saw him when I was 16, but the energy and vitality, but also the way that he embodies his music, whether or not his music or not, when you see him live, he sings every song as though it's his last song. He sings every as though it's his last concert on earth. He's so embodied in what he does, but also incredibly fit for 70, 73 years, the amount of energy. 3 hours nonstop music. Really incredible. Really, really incredible. And yeah, it was interesting for me because I went full circle. So I went to see him at a place called Villa Park, which is a football ground in near Birmingham. And a friend of mine I hadn't seen for 32 years got in touch, and we got tickets, and we went there. And it was 36 years ago to the day when I went there when I was 16. And it was just incredible to reconnect to that time, you know, all those years later, a hot summer's night. It was like it was back in the 1980s again. The stadium was full. It was great music. And it just, yeah, it really connected to that looking it through sort of 52-year-old eyes, but, mm-hmm. you know, still connecting to that 16-year-old about life and all the opportunity of life and, you know, embarking on that journey. So it was lovely to go and take my son last week to the concert, just again, looking it through his eyes and seeing it. So yeah, it's been really good. But back to that thing about Bruce, my God, he looks after himself. You know, it's a leaf we cannot take out of, you know, that actually old age. Because in the West, we have this concept that, you know, old age is like a decline. Where in the East, that they see it much as like the golden times, isn't it? The golden era, it's like of wisdom. And, you know, they do the Tai Chi and, you know, or they do the yoga, or, you know, Ayurveda. Or it's like we just seem to in the West see it as a decline. And that we've got to change that mindset. And as we know, homeopathy is one of the greatest things that you can do to keep that vital force strong.
It really is. Apart from guitar, like do you play any other instruments? And do you still play much guitar these days?
I sort of mess around a bit, you know, on the guitar. I mean, I'm not like I was when I was in a band, but it has reignited seeing live music. It does reignite something with you. But no, I sing. I mean, I was the singer and I played guitar. Right. I mean, I play a little bit of harmonica.
Guitar as well? I somehow thought you played guitar as well.
Yeah, I did. But I was with the singer, you know, because I sort of, you know, I like the singing element of being the front man. And so, I played guitar as well. So I did both. It was good. So it's good to reignite those passions that we leave behind sometimes, don't we? Mm. And just spending some time doing that in within your day, week, and just reconnecting on another level. And
definitely.
And I was thinking that, you know, it's like, I was thinking again about songs and about remedies and thinking, and I always talk about this, about keynotes. And this is something that, again, Robin Murphy really instilled in me about learning keynotes of remedies.
Oh, look, we've lasted, what was it, 6.5 minutes before Robin Murphy came in.
There he goes. He's always there. He's always with us.
Robin, just in case there's any confusion. I wish I got to meet him. But I really feel like he's alive in all of us every single day.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the spirit of Robin is with all of us, with all of us.
Sorry, Marcus, you were saying.
Anyway, I was saying about, so, you know, when you're learning remedies, and even as a home prescriber or even as a homeopath, you know, you learn those keynotes, those characteristic symptoms of the remedy, because it's like if you played a song, like a three chords on the guitar or the three notes on a piano, you play those notes or strum those chords and you would know what remedy. Hot, you know, burning, that's belladonna, you know, or, you know, stiff, better, worse, first motion, better continue motion, better for heat, worse talks. Mm. And it's learning that. So those music analogies is, you know, really comes true, I think, when you really want to really understand these remedies and get these hooks onto them. And that's, to me, is a great way. So keynotes, I think, is one of the best ways to learn the remedies.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to ask you as well about you've just had a graduation at CHE, right?
Yes, we have.
Tell us a little about that. How many graduates did you have, and what do you guys do for your graduation, and what was it like?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was probably the hottest day of the year in the UK. That's quite a rare thing to have a really hot day in the UK, but it was really hot. And it was really lovely. So we had our classroom students come who graduated, but also all our online students, our fast track, part-time. I mean, people came from all over the world. It was incredible. These online students have never actually met physically over, say, 4 years or 2 years fast track, came together. And it was phenomenal. We had it just around the corner from Bloomsbury Square. I think we had like 150 people there at the graduation. I think somebody live streamed it as well on YouTube, I think, as it was going on. But it was really, really lovely. And just to see how you know, these students that are out on the other side of the world, how connected they felt to their fellow students, even though they hadn't met in person. And so they all wanted to be there to connect. And like I said, from Canada, I mean, all over the world, Canada, you know, Europe, America, everybody just coming together to share. And it always reminds me, in the graduations always remind me of the joy of what we do. Mm. You know, that journey, if you remember it, Eugene, as well, that journey to become a homeopath. And I use that word because it's an important word. We do become a homeopath. It's something that we that's that transformation that can go on, and to see them at the end of the journey, because as you know, it's not easy. Training is a homeopath, you know, it's hard work. And at CG, you know, academically, clinically, you know, you have to be at a good high level in order to qualify. So nobody qualifies from CG unless they've met all that criteria. And it was a joy to see, you know, see everybody and to share with that and to, yeah, and also to thank, you know, the friends and the family that have stood by the graduates through that period, which again is not easy for friends and family being experimented on with the remedies or, you know, having to cajole them through all the assessments, the things they have to do. But then to come at the other end and to see them. And for these Jedi homeopaths now to go out there into the world, wherever they are in the world, to practice, but still be part of the CHE family. And I think that's really important that, you know, they're still part of the family. So it was a fantastic evening, really, really lovely. Again, a lot of our lecturers were there as well to share in the celebration. So if anybody's listening out there who graduated, you know, we love you. Keep in touch with us, you know, and let us know how you're getting on. I mean, we get emails every week from practitioners who train, and they always start off with the email. Hi, Marcus. I don't know if you remember me, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we always remember you, you know. Of course we remember you. 25 years, I remember, you know, we remember the process. In fact, we just had one of our administration, senior administrators, Lorraine, who's been with us for 24 years. She's retiring next week. And we went for a dinner with her last week. And again, we always reminisce about all the, oh, do you remember that so-and-so in 2006? Mm. And they were in that class with this. And and one of the new administrators said, I can't believe that you can remember all these people, you know. And they said, because we've shared the journey with them. We know what they've been through, you know, we know what they've been through on that journey to get there. And so we always remember. So, yeah, a bit of a long-winded answer to your question about graduation. But, yeah, it was fantastic.
I've just realized I was just going to check my messages. Oh, yeah, she did say, I have my interview with Marcus on Thursday. So one of my besties is having an interview with you today.
No, it was yesterday. Who was it yesterday?
Today's Friday. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, so Thursday. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so yesterday, I messaged her and asked her how it went. Well, maybe I'll just ask you, how did it go?
Yeah, well, it went great. there's something stirring in Australia. So I've been to quite a few people.
It really is. Yeah, yeah. Because I know a friend of hers is signed up with you as well. And there were a cute few people. I mean, we're so lucky to have Switch On Health here in Australia, which is amazing. Yeah. But because it's completely self-paced, some people find that really hard. Like Bo that works with me, she is really motivated, organized person. So she does really well with that self-paced and doing it in her own time and as it suits her. But for other people who really need that little bit of a nudge, they really need to move along with a group. That's where your fast track program is amazing over the 2 years. And I'm so excited for Elaine to do it because she really should be an honorary homeopath because she was actually a guest on our podcast as well. I'm just trying to think here. I think around episode 8 or somewhere, her son was healed from autism through homeopathy.
She also did
a lot of work. I mean, we call her the Oracle because she did so much study herself to help heal her son. Wasn't episode 8. It's one of the earlier episodes. Anyway, she is an incredible woman. So I'm really excited that she's finally, we've been saying to her for years, you need to just go become a homeopath. And so finally she's doing this.
That's great. No, exactly. And listen, I mean, I expect great things now from Australia because this happens a lot. So all of a sudden we get a country that everybody wants to suddenly wants a strain. We've had it in Bulgaria, we've had it in Poland, we've had it in Hungary, we've had it in Denmark. All of a sudden there's this stirring within, and you're the center of this, I have to say, Eugenie, in Australia, Perth, because you're sort of like inspiring people in that side of the world. But it's great because you see the love and passion for the subject. And I always say, and I've said this a lot on open days, you don't decide to get into homeopathy. Homeopathy pulls you in when the time is right. And whatever that time is the right time. And if people do feel that, then it's important that I think to follow their heart, because most people are doing things that they don't want to be. They're in jobs they don't want to be in. They're in relationships they're not happy in. And actually the whole thing of disease, as you know, that's what happens, disease. We're not, lack of love, lack of joy in our life, lack of doing things that are in alignment with who we are. And with the courses, you know, the CHE practitioner courses, you're right. It is, you know, you're taking you on a learning journey. You know, it's a training. So, you know, there's live element on Zoom and, you know, through the online sessions we have. But it's also, you know, we're taking you on a journey because it's got to be structured. Mm. It's got to be paced. And otherwise, it's like me. If I don't have that, I'm all over the place. I need structure and I need saying that there's a deadline for your assessment. There's a deadline to watch this. So it just motivates you.
Yeah,
so,
it does. Yes.
Thank you for all you do, Eugenie, all you do for homeopathy, because it's great. It's really amazing what you
it
do.
It doesn't feel like work when you're living in your passion there. It's just easier. It just flows.
Absolutely. No, totally. And you're right. And I say this to prospective students. I say, look, we can teach you homeopathy. We can't teach you passion and enthusiasm. Mm. That's got to come from you, you know, and you've just got to follow your heart and do it. So yeah, we're doing a lot of interviews and got all the applications coming in for September. So if any listeners out there, if you want to apply, go to chehomeopathy.com, check us out. And yeah, I personally interview everybody that applies for the practitioner training. So don't be scared. It's quite important, but I want to know why.
Most people by now know you pretty nice. I don't think they'll be scared to have a chat with you.
But I want to know, and the two questions I always ask you, Eugenie, is why do you want to become a homeopath, and why now? Why this time now in your life? And they're two big questions, but it's important for me to I want to know why. Mm. I want to know that it's calling you, and so it's great.
It'd be interesting if you recorded all of those answers. Actually, you could create a nice little podcast just from that.
You're right. Well, you know what? I've asked those two questions for 25 years.
Wow!
So people put in their applications. Obviously, I read every application, and then I always say, I know what you've written in your application, but just in your own words, why homeopathy? Why do you want to become a homeopath, and why now? Hmm. So you're right. I should have recorded it. 25 years of
If only, could have, should have, would have. Hey, so you know our Facebook group, the Homeopathy Hangout Podcast Facebook group, which is growing so fast at the moment. Like, I'm getting about 10 people being added to the group every single day. I don't know where that all coming from, but it's all this influx of new people, which is wonderful. But I posted in there yesterday saying, hey, we're having another chin wag, and we're getting lovely feedback from the chin wags, by the way, which is lovely. But I posted in there saying, what questions do you guys have for us? So just shout out to Leah Bug. She wrote a question here for you, Marcus, so I'll read it out.
Great.
I might just copy and paste it here into the chat box as well. She said, I would love to hear about what works best for you guys in reality in your practices in terms of prescribing 4th, 5th, 6th edition of the Organon for potency and dosing. Do you see better results with C potencies, LM, slow and steady approach? What potencies do you favor over others? Like, what actually goes on in daily practice in acutes versus chronics? So there's another part to the question, but I'll start with that part for now.
Yeah. Well, to me, we should, as a homeopath, as Hanuman says, and again, I would say the same, what Robin would say, a homeopath should know all aspects of potency, the range, from homeopathic mother tinctures, you know, to X's, to C, all the way through to LMs. You know, we should be able to, we should know that whole range of potency. But again, I always go back to this same thing, that it's the patient, the client, that determines the potency. It's the vital force of the patient and the client. So we adjust our prescribing to the person who's sat in front of us. So somebody's got to, you know, say you do a house visit and somebody's got a fever, you know, and you've got to, you know, I don't know, say it's belladonna. Then if it's, you know, it's a fast fever, especially in kids and stuff, you know, I'd give a 200 if I had it. But if I only got a 30, then I'm going to use that, because to me it's about the remedy is the most important thing, and the potency is we have to adjust it according to the person sat in front of us. So to me, it's not about this potency is great, this potency isn't, and I hear this a lot in homeopathy. To me, it's about the person sat in front of us, or, you know, wherever they are, how you're treating them. Mm. It's about their vital force, and we're following their vital force. That's what determines the potency. So if it's a very chronic case, very low vitality, then I may go low and often. If it's very much an organ support, I'm giving just say for the heart or for the liver, then I may use the 3X a potency, you know, or a mother tincture if I think it's needed. So I think you determine it according to what is in front of you. And I think I think I've said this probably before, but I think we have to get out of our way of our allopathic thinking about potency. You know, it's the remedy itself is not powerful. That is a key to a lock. Like you said, you have a fast sports car. The key to the sports car doesn't have the power. It's the interaction in the ignition, and then the sports car's engine goes, and then it's off it goes. So to me, you know, as he says in the organon, the first aphorism, it should be a gentle, rapid, permanent cure. So I think it should always be as gentle as possible, but we're following the patient. It's like Tai Chi. Mm. We're following the patient. We're following the vital force. I don't know if you agree with that.
Absolutely.
I've just seen all these hearts actually come up on the chat.
That happened. I don't even know. I had Zoom has just updated. I don't know if yours did as well, but mine just like automatically updated. Now I've suddenly got all this stuff on the right-hand side. So I don't know. I don't know how that happened.
Just for everybody listening, what we're getting, I've just got a load of love hearts from Eugenia as I'm talking. Well, that's very nice.
I was like, what did I do that? I was like, abort, like, how do I? I was just copying you. I wonder if it's, oh, I know why. The person that posted that comment on Facebook, I copied and pasted onto Word so that it's ready for me to ask you tonight. And she, it says Hopeful Mindset is her name. She posted in the group. So I don't know what her actual name is, but she said, I am loving the chin wags with a bunch of hearts. And then she said, I would like to hear a discussion. So I think that's those hearts that copied over there.
Nice.
So okay. Are from Hopeful Mindset, whatever her name is, not from me.
Yeah.
I agree. And what you were saying about, I actually heard Robin Murphy, what you were saying, that we're actually vital force practitioners. You know, we're following the vital force. And as you're talking about the chi, following the energy, yes, that's exactly what we're doing. Have you found, though, like, because I've definitely found when I first started out, I started out with, you know, just the 30 Cs. I was really scared to prescribe the 200 Cs, 1 M's. I mean, if you told me 10 years ago that I will be prescribing mega potencies daily to people, I would never have believed you because it goes against everything, obviously, that we were taught. But since interviewing Jill and, you know, just learning more about it and then most importantly, getting feedback from my clients. Because, you know, we try these things. You go out there and you're like, oh, my gosh, I hope they're okay. And then they come back and they tell you that was the most amazing experience of my life, taking those remedies. And you're like, okay, I didn't kill her. So maybe I could try it with somebody else. And, you know, you develop as a practitioner, as a person from there. So then going from the 30 Cs, I started playing around with LMs. And that was mostly because I had quite a few eczema cases. So I was using sulfur LM quite a lot. But then I had hormonal woman that I didn't want to give CPR 30 or 200 to daily. So I started doing CPR. Yep. LM1. And then I was getting some mentoring from a homeopath. I can't remember who it was, but we prescribed anilonium and she said maybe do LM1. So I have like a small little range of LM potencies.
Yeah.
I never found them for me personally that they were that effective.
Yeah.
And it was probably about a year or two that I prescribed that a lot. And so just for me personally, but I think really the potency and what you prescribe, it's so much of that is to do with a practitioner. I wonder how much of our own energy goes into what we can prescribe. And one of the books, I have to go and go through my books and see which one it was, but one of them was saying exactly along those lines that a practitioner can only prescribe a certain potency when they are energetically ready to prescribe that potency. So, you know, who knows if maybe I started out giving mega potencies when I wasn't quite ready as a person or a practitioner to do it, maybe clients would have had more aggravations. But I'm going to go find that book so I can read it to you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, that's an opinion, obviously, and there's lots of opinions in homeopathy. It's a nice thing to say.
And that's why we're having the chin wags, right? So we can just like nut out all these things.
Yeah, you know, we're not always going to agree as well on things. I think, I just go back to that thing. It's about the patient. And I mean, LMs, you talk about LMs. I use LMs a lot and I love LMs. I've had some of my deepest, you know, shifts with clients on LMs. But to me, it's not necessarily, it was the right potency for them at that time. Mm. Not that this is the only potency to use. However, when Hahnemann passed away, all they found was LMs. And he talks a lot about that in the sixth edition of the Organon. In fact, that's one of the questions, wasn't it, about the fourth, fifth, and sixth. To me, I'll go to the latest edition. Because if you notice in the fourth and the fifth and the sixth, he says he changes, you know, because it's an evolution, isn't it? And homeopathy can never be stagnant. That's why we've always got to be pushing and experimenting and trying new things, just like Hahnemann did. Mm. So I think that I don't think this is the thing about, again, back to allopathy way of thinking, that this is the potency is to me, it's like tuning in the radio. And so you've got to get the right remedy first. It's got to be a law of similars. That's the principle, isn't it, of homeopathy. And then the potency is the tuning in, and you tune in according to the person that you're treating, according to their vital force at the time. So sometimes, for example, you said about, and I often say I prescribe sepia, and I the person's doing really well on a 30C, and I think, actually, they really need, you know, this is a really good remedy for them. I go to LMs because I feel there's so much, almost like much broader in their action, that they sort of, it's almost like you get more juice out of the remedy. I mean, that's the only way I can explain it. So that person can be on that remedy a long time. But as you're succussing, and I always start everybody on LM1. Mm. So this is, I hear this a lot. People start on LM6 and LM6. I don't understand that. I just start from, maybe I'm just quite simple in my thinking, but I start with one and I just try to work my way up. And the secret is, if the person still needs it, don't let them run out. You've got to top it back up again. Mm. So, you know, the same potency if you decide they still need that. But I see them very much, you get a lot more out of that remedy. And I've had people on LMs, even like LM1 for like a year before I've needed to change it. But also what's great about it, if you get very sensitive patients, you can reduce the succussions, you can reduce the drops, you can reduce the frequency. I remember once I had a case of a lady who'd been very abused in a relationship, and I wanted to give a Staphysangria, and every time I gave a Staphysangria, even, you know, a 30C, even a 6C, I remember giving her, she would aggravate. And so I put her onto LMs. The LMs she aggravated, and so we found, because we could adjust it, to take one drop, one succussion every other day. And that was perfect for her. Anything above that, and she aggravated. So the LMs are light because you can adjust them. But again, back to what we just said at the very beginning, I think potency, I think it's very much individual, you know, to the person.
I had that. You've just reminded me of the silica case. My daughter was one, so that must have been about 7 years ago. She was so clearly silica, but she had huge prolapse bladder issues. And so she had this mesh surgery to keep the bladder there. Mm. And the surgery had already, the mesh had already kind of come unstuck once, and she had to have another, you know, and with silica, we do get told to be careful. Yeah. So I did give silica, and then she started saying that she was feeling some things in her bladder area that wasn't feeling right. So I freaked out, but really clearly she needed silica, and I did do the LMs, and she did aggravate on that as well. And I did similar to you, just, you know, just like every, like once a week type thing. And it was a really good remedy for her as well. She was a very elderly lady. And with that, because the surgery was going to cost something like 10 grand. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't really want to be responsible for her, you know, apart from the trauma, the financial costs as well. So,
So I think, I don't know whether we answered the question there. I think, what else in the question? How often do you see that chronic remedy covers the acute? And if you see patients for acutes only, or do you do acutes for chronic clients, and pros and cons? So that's a really good question. So I remember, for me, I don't know how you, Eugenie, but if I'm treating somebody chronically for, and then all of a sudden an acute flares up, I stop the remedy, the chronic remedy, and I will deal with the acute. So I've had patients that have come and in pain on the phone saying, could I help them? But they've seen a homeopath already. They're on a chronic remedy, but a massive flare up of cystitis, and they're in such pain and agony. The homeopath says, no, you've got to carry on. If you take any other remedy, that's going to interfere with the chronic, and you're going to do all that. It's like, to me, that's crazy. Nobody should be in pain, you know? So I'll just say, take some Cantharis, you know, deal with the acute. And often check if you ever had this before, and often they have, it's a return of old symptoms. So I will prescribe, and then you know, we let that sort of pass over, and then we go back to the chronic remedy, or what if it's still indicated. So I don't know what you think about that.
I do exactly the same. So I prefer to do any acutes myself or any of my chronic clients. If I can't, luckily we have the team of five homeopaths, it's all on my team. So now again, when I can't, my team has done an acute for me, but I will always touch base with them and just see what they've done so that I can, and also to see whether it's possibly an aggravation, or sometimes I will send my patient notes to them so that they know what I've prescribed, and they can kind of see whether it's But as much as I possibly can, I try to deal with any acutes myself, because very often, yeah, it's 80% of the time, it's not actually an acute, it's an aggravation, or it's a, you know, something that's come up. But I'm shocked by that. I had that just last week, a client emailed me and she said she had seen a homeopath and they had also said that she's not allowed to take any, this was actually for an acute. So she just random acute called, try to get some help, and the homeopath said, no, you're only allowed to give this remedy every 4 hours, you're not allowed to give anything else. And it wasn't enough to keep the pain at bay for this child, and the mom ended up having to resort to Panadol. And she said, I'm was so sad that I couldn't see you or somebody else that would have made her feel more comfortable to give it more regularly, because it was kind of helping, but you know, every 4 hours is really not enough for like a really intense.
Well, but why? But where does that even? But where does that come from?
I was so sad.
4 hours, you know.
So Panadol is better than just increasing your dosing of the remedy. I mean,
but I just don't get where these things come from. You were again back to the prescribing. You're prescribing according to the vital force.
Yeah.
If that vital force, you give a remedy, and then 20, I don't know, say somebody's got a headache, or I don't, what was wrong with the child?
It was an ear infection or something like that.
Yeah. So say earache, which is one of the worst. If you've ever suffered from earache, it's one of the worst.
I did. It's terrible. Yeah. Anything in your head, migraines, earaches, anything like that in your head, I feel like it's just...
Exactly. And so say, I don't know, say the indicated, you know, remedy was something like, I don't know, say it was pulsatilla.
Yeah.
Or Hepsol, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And they're in pain. You know, you give it, and then I always, so for my patients, I would say, you know, give it and then see how they are taking it, for example. So they may take it, and I'll say if it comes back, then repeat it again. But you know, you adjust it, and you know, do that for 4 doses, and then ring me to say how the child is, or because I never with acutes like that, especially with kids, I always want the parents to reconnect back to me within an hour or a couple of hours just to see how they're doing, because as you know, acutes they can move really fast. So you know, you adjust your prescribing according to the situation, don't you? You just don't say take one Hepsol and then wait 4 hours and the kid's, you know, after half an hour screaming his head off until the next dose. What's that about? You know, we're not following the vital force.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I really don't know where that comes from, but yeah, you definitely follow the vital force. When my son was a baby, he was a terrible teether. My daughter just sailed through it. But I would have been in third year when he was a baby and teething. And I remember the first time, because chamomilla 30C was helping, but it just wasn't like quite knocking it on the head. And so somebody said to use a 200C. And then I was like, oh my gosh, a 200C on a baby, you know, like this is my little newbie student mindset. Gave him a 200C and it wasn't like quite holding. And then in the end, I gave it to him every five. I found when I dosed him every 5 minutes with 200C, within 3 doses, he'll be calm. Now, I don't know if that was like anxious first time mum, just like, he's still crying, just give him another one. But you know, he's never had Panadol in his life, and he'll be 12 in 6 weeks' time. He's never had Panadol ever. I can't remember what you guys call it over there.
We have Panadol.
So, you know, rather give the chamomilla 200C every 5 minutes for, you know, 3 doses. That was usually all he needed. He never needed more than that, and then he would be settled. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm probably more on the over prescribing side. Like I probably give too much, but I just don't see many aggravations in my clinic or with my prescribing. So. We were having our homeopath team meeting this morning, and I just said to them, because a lot of the mums in our Facebook group, you know, we've got a couple thousand mums here, and mostly in Perth, who I give acute advice to, and the homeopaths on my team. And one of the homeopaths said this morning, you know, these mums, they're prescribing so many different remedies all at once, and they're all over the place. And I'm like, do you know what? I was exactly like that when I started out. And I often find people don't prescribe enough. It's more often that you hear, oh, homeopathy didn't work. And I'll ask, how many remedies did you give? And they'll say, oh, I gave a dose and it didn't work. But also when you are new to homeopathy, if all you've been taught is you have to give drugs to your baby and suddenly you find this, something natural, then you do go a little bit like crazy because you're like, wow, I can treat everything. And you do tend to overprescribe to your kids too much. But you know what? Yeah. That levels out for some people after a few months, some people after a year, some people after 2 years. Because I watch these moms that I've been walking with this journey for 5-6 years now that I've been in Perth.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so many of them, they're just giving the remedies as needed now. And sometimes the child will have a fever and they won't even give anything. But initially, when you start out, I do feel like there's this tendency to overprescribe, which I personally think is fine because home prescribing homeopathy is a skill. And just like any skill, initially, you're going to have to work a little bit harder at it. You're going to have to test it out a little bit more. You're going to make mistakes. If you keep on saying, oh, I can't give a remedy, oh, I can't give a remedy, you're never really going to learn. So I have no issue personally with getting in there, getting down and dirty, give all the remedies, go for it. I mean, within reason, but I mean, it's
well, you learn homeopathy by doing it.
Yeah.
This is not just an academic exercise and there should be no fear. You know, I said this quote last time about, you know, fear knocks on the door, love answers, and there's nobody there. It's like when we have a love for something, then all that fear disappears. So I think what people got to understand is that homeopathy does no harm. You know, it's perfectly safe. It's safe from pregnancy, newborn. You know, I've used it over 30 years and I can tell you now it does no harm. Okay. Mm. It does no harm. And as you said, aggravations are actually rare. Often what happens with aggravations, you're just going too deep too soon, say, for example, in chronic case taking. Mm. And that's really all that's it. That is. Or sometimes it can be an opponency that it's just a little bit too much stirring the pot up, but it always works with the body. To me, homeopathy always works with the body, not against it. And that's why it's safe. And you're right, in the beginning, people get into homeopathy, oh my God, I can do this for this and this. But also you learn, it's like the pendulum swings one way and then finds its way in the middle, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And when you realize that all we're trying to do is just key to a lock and the body's doing what it needs to do with that remedy, that key in the lock, you get more patience with the remedy, don't you? So the remedy action. So instead of just, you know, waiting 1 minute and 34 seconds, if there's no change, you give another dose. You know, you go through that and you sort to learn, actually, this is different than allopathic medicine, back to our original point. Actually, what we're doing is we've got to follow the body. What's the signs of health? You know, often with kids, you give the remedy. What normally happens if they're sick? They fall asleep with it. You know it's working. Or, you know, they'll just... Oh, yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing often with kids, isn't it? Or you may suddenly, you know, they'll get an exacerbation of symptoms, all this mucus and snot will pour out of them. Or, you know, or they'll vomit, or they'll ask for something that they want. But you just see a change in the state, and that's what we're looking for, aren't we? The change
every
in the state.
Every single time, hey, with kids, yeah. It's so satisfying. Amy, my clinic manager, told me just this morning, they went out for dinner last night. Her one daughter said that her tummy is sore. She grabbed some Nux Vomica. Next second, she's running around. You know, like that's the kid just forget that they ever had an issue. Like it works so fast. My daughter,
all they said, they're up all night. You know, that the vomiting, or you know, I'm sick, and you give them the remedies, and then they, you know, go to sleep, and straight away. I mean, really, within seconds. I mean, with the kids, and then they're up having the breakfast the next morning. You know, like nothing's happened. It's like because their vitality is so strong, and this is really important. I know you agree, Eugenie. The more that you stimulate that vital force, the stronger it becomes. And it's like a muscle, isn't it? You work out the muscle, it becomes stronger. It's the same with the vital force. If you just keep relying and suppressing the symptoms, the vital force, it almost just stops working because it's not being exercised. You're not reminding it what it can do. So I'm totally agreement with you. And it's like, have no fear, just do it.
Absolutely. And you know what? Those, I would say maybe 5% of the population who are sensitive, like super sensitive to remedies and aggravate on everything. It's such a small percentage. And you know, those are usually the people that are sensitive to everything else around them anyway. They're sensitive to other people's energies. They're sensitive to smoke, artificial fragrances, to color, all these other things. They're sensitive to everything. And so when you give them an energetic medicine, often they're sensitive to that as well. So it's not like it's a surprise. If you're a robust, strong, healthy person, you're not just going to randomly for no reason aggravate on a remedy. But if you're somebody that's sensitive to everything, you probably need to be a little bit more careful with the remedies. But if you're just an everyday Joe blog going about your day, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Totally agree. And that that hypersensitivity is also showing the vital force, you know, is or the susceptibility is quite low. And because health is about our adaptation to the environment, isn't it? The way that we can adapt, that's what health is. So if there's a cold air, or it's rain, or you get sweat, and if your vital force is quite low, then you're gonna get sick often. So you're right. If you're oversensitive to all these things, then that in itself indicates you need some chronic treatment with homeopathy to increase that that sort of vitality within your system. So yeah, totally agree with that. Totally agree. Definitely.
Leah has had another part of a question here. She said, how easy is it to sustain a homeopathic practice just by case taking without extra course offerings, selling remedies? What's the reality of staying busy and getting or keeping clients? I think that's a really good question.
Really good question. I mean, yeah. I never, you know, when I was practicing for, you know, full on practicing from when I sort of started, that's all I did. It was just case taking. It was patients, you know. I never did courses. I never did offered selling remedies. I'd supply the remedies as part of the consultation. So yeah, it's very easy to sustain a homeopathic practice by just being a homeopath. However, you know, I think especially, I mean, God, when I started, there was no internet. So, but now, you know, a lot of people are doing, like you said, like webinars or different things, and I think what's good about that is that you're building your community. Well, if you do webinars or short little courses or Facebook groups, you know, you're building community, and that's lovely, because now with the technology, people can find groups that they're interested in, like homeopathy groups or home prescribing groups. So, but to answer your question, you can definitely, I've done it. I did it for many, 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 many years. You don't need to have to do all these extra things. You can, if that's all you want to do, then just do it.
Absolutely. Don't really agree. I think a lot of that comes down to depending on, I mean, you, that's the beautiful thing, because you are an entrepreneur, you are your own boss. So you can really make with it whatever you want. Now, if you are working from home, your costs, your overheads are going to be really low. And the really good thing is, if you've got a dedicated space, you can actually claim from your tax of your working from home for part of the internet, part of the electricity, part of your, you know, your coffee, all that sort of stuff as well, which is great. In my case, though, I have a whole building that I lease. So our expenses are huge, you know, and so I have to have other things as well to help run the practice. So we sell our kick-ass kits. I really, for anybody listening, I am waiting for somebody to prove me wrong. But literally, I believe we have the most beautiful homeopathic kits on the planet that I make and sell, and my staff make and sell.
Yeah, they're great. Really good.
They are so gorgeous. I'm so proud of that. And there's been years of building. Sorry, I just have to plug my kits here, just because I did a little reel again today, just with some of my kits, because we've just had a new color come in. We've got six colors of our pouches, and we've got our beautiful teal cases. And we have got waterproof labels, and they're triple layered. So, you know, you peel them off and there's information inside. We've got dots on all the lids. We only use amber glass, really quality, high quality canvas. We've got now these beautiful vinyl information cards as with these as well. So I've needed to do something like that to help with my overheads. I've got, well, just employed a new staff member that's starting as well. So I've got four or five staff. We've got two virtual assistants. Yeah. My husband was.
Yeah, you've got, yeah.
So
it's, you got a business.
So we need to, to make that, but it doesn't have to. But I'd tell you what, I'm really proud of these homeopaths who are doing a lot of online courses to get that sustainable ongoing income. For example, Paula Jeffries, she has created these Oracle cards. And, you know, we've sold about a dozen of her Oracle deck homeopathy cards. I don't know if you've seen them. I've got my pack at the clinic.
I've seen
them. I can't
show
you. Yeah. They're gorgeous. Like it says there, for example, like, you know, it's like a normal Oracle deck. So you like hold it and you put your intention in it. I've used it with a couple of my clients, got them to choose a card. Yeah. And then, you know, for Naxwamika, for example, it'll say, Naxwamika personality is this. What can you do today to find more balance in your life? Or something like that. So each card has got like a message. Yeah. So good on Paula, because now she's got this beautiful additional income from selling these Oracle cards.
So you're right. It's like an expression of who you are, whatever you're going to do. Some people, I mean, I think now more than ever, and we talked about this, I think, in one of our podcasts, that, you know, you've, as long as you've got internet connection, a laptop, you can be anywhere in the world and run a homeopathic practice. This is what coaches do all the time. And we need to take a leaf out of that. But if you, and I do think one of the secrets, and I know we did discuss this, is niching an area.
Absolutely.
Find an area you're passionate about, niche in that area, you become an expert then, and people will know you for that. Whether it's infertility, eczema, whatever it is, choose a niche. It makes it a lot easier if you want to build a sustainable practice and do it, you know, in a way that, you know, you've got a great living from it. So yes, case taking, just normal, what we call box standard homeopath, seeing patients either online, in person, go get them. You know, it's totally, totally doable. Because guess what? People are doing it. And I, what I did when I first started, and if you remember the story in the podcast, was I was surrounded by people that said, oh, you can't make a living out of homeopathy, all this. And, you know, I had worked three jobs and, you know, tried to pay for my fees at college. I needed to see find the people that were doing it. And that's what I did. And I say to you, back to the question is, go and find out the people that are doing it, because you'll learn something from that. And if you want to fly like an eagle, stop hanging around with the turkeys who may be telling you you can't do that. So find the people that are doing it and you'll fly.
Amazing. I love this saying, this business podcast that I listen to. He always says niche until it hurts, or niche your face off. Or he's American, so he'll say niche your face off. But what he'll say is that if you decide that you are going to be a homeopath who specializes in UTIs in children under 5 years old or something like that. Yeah, like you need to niche it down so much that you are the only person in that niche. So if anybody thinks my child has got a UTI, you know, they're 1 year old, everyone will go, oh, that's the person. Like they'll, you know, like you need to be that one person. And
exactly.
And obviously their family members and everyone else will come and see you for different complaints, but niche to that point where you are, because automatically then you are the only person, but you are also the best person, and you are, because there's no competition. Like you are the one that.
But also, you get really good at it because that's all you're focusing on. Now, it doesn't mean like you're saying, and this is really important because I hear this a lot of people say, "Yeah, but I like to treat other." Yes, you can treat other things, but what people know you for. So I see a lot of people do female health. Well, that's so broad.
It's
you know, you just got to expect it could be fibroids, it could be hot flushes and, you know, menopause, get very, very specific. It could be PCOS, you know, whatever it is, but be very specific if you're going to niche, because that is the key. And I did it. So many people I know who I've given advice to have done it, and they just fly from doing it because it makes sense. It happens in medicine. Medicine does it all the time, specializes. Mm. Why not difference in homeopathy? You know, so totally, totally agree.
Yeah, a person that does that really well is Tracy White, who specializes in steroid withdrawal. So TSW, topical steroid withdrawal syndrome. And she is so good. So I've actually had two eczema cases where I suspected that was what was happening and sent them to her. And those clients had amazing results because she's the expert in that. You know, she sees it. She knows exactly what the person can expect. And because sometimes it's often something that you are working with for years. You can think you're fine and then you have a flare up. And it's nasty. It's nasty. Yeah. So, yeah.
And also, you'll get other practitioners referring to you once they know that's what.
Absolutely.
That's what you do. Absolutely. You know. In fact, that leads on to this next question. It says, "I'm loving the chin wags. I would like to hear a discussion about the limitations of homeopathy. As powerful as homeopathy is, what can it not do? Do you ever refer clients to other types of practitioners for adjunct treatment in addition to homeopathy to help a client feel better quicker?" Can I answer that? Would you mind? Because this is a big passion of mine, because absolutely refer on to other practitioners. And I see a lot of practitioners, homeopaths, but won't refer, say, to the osteopath or to, you know, any body work or something else, like whatever you think the patient needs. Because often they're scared that they're going to lose the patient. And it's like, that is the most craziest thing that I've ever heard. Your patient or clients, depends which part of the world you're listening, because some people call them clients or some people call them patients. Our only goal is to help them the best way that we can help them. And if that means that we think that they need some body work, some osteopathy, cranial, sacral, whatever it is, then we need to refer them on. Sometimes they need counseling, or they might need some particular type of psychotherapy if you feel that that's what they need. So for me, I've always found when I've recommended it to patients and clients and say, what I think you need is this, they are really, really grateful that you've suggested that, you know, that you've suggested that something else that could also help them. And so I think it's a disservice if we don't do that. Has homeopathy got limitations? People need different things at different times. You know, people need different things. That homeopathy can be amazing, incredible, but sometimes they need things that go adjunctly, you know? And I always say, it's like allopathic medicine. I always say it's a scale. If I'm on a car accident, the first place I want to be is a hospital. I'll be taking arnica if I'm conscious, and that did happen to me. But they can put me back together again, you know? But if I've got a chronic disease, then I'm going to look at other ways to try to get heal myself through different therapies. So absolutely, you should all have an osteopath. If you're a homeopath, have an osteopath, you know, or, you know, body work or cranial, whatever it is. you should have something that you can refer to and have that as part of your network. I don't know what you think, Eugenie.
Absolutely.
But
somebody I refer to a lot here, I've got about four or five medical doctors here in Perth who has been referring clients to me and my team, which is just incredible. And one of them I've been referring quite a lot to as well, because she does online consults as well for anyone listening. But she is an expert in CIRS, chronic inflammatory response syndrome, which can be due to a variety of different things, but often due to mold. And I think I feel that could be a limitation for homeopathy, because with mold, when you're doing, I've tried doing just homeopathic detox therapy with clients using, you know, the mold detox, and I'll give them a bowel nozote alongside. I'll give organ supports alongside as well, kind of like, you know, give them all these things to support their body before I go into the detox. But they still can often get some pretty nasty detox reactions. But this is where Dr. Shanti is really good, because she will prescribe all the supplements and the binders. So sometimes I do think you need those physical binders. Or for example, you know, her son with autism, homeopathy was amazing, but really a lot of those shifts really happened because she made a huge lifestyle change. She changed their diet, and she also did Dr. Andy Cutler, I think, his protocol of heavy metal detoxing. I think sometimes, especially if it's like really serious toxicity, I think you do need some of those supplements and those binders and things like that.
Absolutely.
To help carry that out of the body.
And what you just said then, Hanuman talks of this in the organ about lifestyle. You know, it's not about prescribing a pill, because again, we're going down the allopathic model. But we also have got to engage, you know, you have to engage yourself in that. And as homeopaths as well, as I always talk about, but you've got to look at your lifestyle. You've got to look at about what you're eating. There's got to be lifestyle shifts, what you're eating, how you're sleeping, you know, your movement, your exercise, all this plays a part if you want to really raise that vitality. So I think it's life, as you said, lifestyle, really quite crucial, you know, really quite crucial to, but like I said, sometimes people need other things. So we should always be, my back to the question, we should always be open. The only one thing I would say is, and listen, I love acupuncture. I love it. It's great. I love it. However, I don't like to mix things together too much like that. So if they see an acupuncture Chinese medicine, I would often say, well, take a pause from homeopathy, do that first, then come back. Because otherwise, I don't know what's working, because they're going to see the acupuncture. I'm giving them a remedy, and it's very hard to judge. I don't know why you feel the same with that.
It's very funny, Mark, because I'm just like laughing, because we don't really know about each other's style of prescribing, or really the way, you know, we just kind of clicked and we thought, hey, let's just like chat a bit more. But like everything you say, like I work exactly the same. When we were talking about referring to other people and I was going to tell you this story, but we'll share it now. This client of mine, he was seeing a bunch of practitioners, and then she'd bought like a bunch of sessions with an acupuncturist. And I actually said exactly that to her. I said, I don't think the homeopathy and the acupuncture, because they're both energy medicine, I love acupuncture, it's amazing. I said to her, just go finish your sessions off with the acupuncturist. Yeah. And once you finish that, come back to me and we'll see what's changed and what hasn't. And then we'll go from there. So I do exactly the same.
Yeah, there you go. We're flying like eagles, Eugenie. Yeah, we're flying like eagles. I think it's a mindset. You know, it's about a mindset that we're looking in the direction always is what is best for our patients, what's best for our client. And I think if you come from that mindset and come from your heart, you know, before each session I have my client, you know, I'll take a few minutes, not in front of the client, obviously by myself, but I'll just connect and say, you know, how can I best serve this person? Because that's all we're doing. We're in service, aren't we? And we just want to get them back to that innate health that they were born with, that we all have. It's our birthright. And, you know, if we have that in a front of mind as a practitioner, to me, that's our North Star. That's our guiding star. And you won't go wrong. I don't think, you know, it's kept me going for 30 odd years. But you can always be open to new things. Whatever's good, you can help your clients or your patients.
When you said about the eagle, I just had such a fun case this week, which I am just dying to hear how she goes. She's a long-standing client of mine that is one of those just goodies that just comes for her regular follow-ups every 8 weeks, whether something's wrong or not. She comes in, we have a chat. So I just love seeing her, because it's just been such a journey. You know, I have grown and learned so much alongside her. And now we're at the point where, because she understands homeopathy so good, I can use her for experiments. So I will sometimes say, hey, I've got this new remedy. Can you try it for me to see what shifts and what it does? But after interviewing Marcus Kuntosh a couple of weeks ago, the episodes come out on the color remedies and also the bird remedies. She kept on talking about this shoulder pain that she has had a frozen shoulder, and then she's torn a ligament in the shoulder and just complaining about the shoulder. And Marcus was saying that on the shoulders and also the neck and then chesty type complaints can often be a sign of the birds. And he was saying, you know, they'll often say they want to just open their chest so they can breathe. And then there's these, you know, kind of like broken wing type issues that they can have. She had issues with her eyes as well, and they're deteriorating really badly. And there's this really huge operation that they're thinking of doing, and she's hoping she can avoid. And I kind of jokingly said to her, oh, maybe we need an eagle remedy for you because, you know, eagles have got such great vision. And then as I said that jokingly, I suddenly thought, oh my gosh, well, she's got this like torn ligament in her shoulder and she's had the frozen shoulder. So I repertorized in Radar Opus, just typed in frozen shoulder, and Haliaetus leucocephalus, which is the bald eagle, was one of the like five remedies that was in there. And I was like, no way. Then I grabbed out the guy that wrote the book, Ulrich Walter, who is the author of the Colors and Homeopathy book. I grabbed out this book and I pulled out the color chart and I was like, what's your favorite color? And she pointed to this blue. And I looked in the book, the corresponding remedies, and Haliaetus leucocephalus was in there. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be really cool. So I should probably be talking about this prematurely, but I'm really excited to hear how she goes. And just the magic, like in it, like being in a consult, following this journey, just listening, staying open. I mean, it could be a complete dud. She might come back in 8 weeks and go, that did nothing. But I'm excited to hear how her.
That's the way we think as homeopaths. You know, it's that's the shift in the paradigm. We're looking for. I always think this, you know, we scan, we analyze, and we probe. We scan, it's like almost unconsciously, or as a person's talking, we're picking up patterns on what they're saying, aren't we? And that's what we do. And then that often will lead us to a particular direction that we're perceiving what needs to be cured or perceiving what is needed. And that, you're right, we just got to be as open as we can and as neutral as we can. Because, I mean, you know, some people will be hearing this and thinking, oh my God, she's crazy. Give him what? Give him bald eagle. That's a crazy remedy. That person needed, I don't know, knack me off. But we've always got to be open, because I think that the more that we're open, the more that homeopathy keeps evolving. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to that beautiful quote with Rumi that, you know, beyond wrong thinking, beyond right thinking, there is a field. I'll meet you there. That place of neutrality there. We've always got to be open, you know, as a profession, as practitioners, because the more open we are, especially in that open, in that therapeutic space, the more people will tell us the truth of who they are. And so we can get and help them and help them to the next stage of their journey.
Mm. Well, this lady, over the past 2 years of seeing me every 8 weeks, she has had NatMer. She's had pretty much every other remedy too. And she's done
example.
She's done really well on all of them. So now she's kind of coming in for the fine tweaking of this and that, because we've done so much. So now it's just this beautiful
fun. Well, maybe we need to give her an LM nature wheel. How about that? No, I'm joking.
Maybe. Well, who knows? Who knows?
I'm not saying she's nature wheel. I was giving that as an ex.
I am happy to go in that direction. I'm happy to explore all of it. The mega potencies is my thing at the moment. And I have brought my radionics machine home that I got a couple of weeks ago that I haven't had a chance to play with because we went to Bali. Yeah. It arrived the day before we left, so it's sitting there. I've been too scared to like open it and play with
it. Get it up, open it up.
But I brought it home, and I'm going to go read the manual, and I'm going to go play with it this weekend. So who knows? I might be doing all sorts of weird stuff next week.
Oh, they're amazing. You can broadcast. I've done all sorts of things on those radio machines. They're so good.
Everyone keeps telling me that. So now I'm like, okay, I have to go try this out. So I will this weekend.
Here we go, try it. Absolutely. Well, that's your weekend. You've got your weekend mapped out for you.
I do. Thank you so much, Marcus. It's always fun.
Thank you.
Have you got any more interviews today for people?
No, not today. No, because today, because we've got a big promotion at the moment with CHE Pro. So your CHE Pro, which is for all homeopaths, or any homeopaths out there. I know, Eugenie, you like CHE Pro.
I've been subscribed for years now. I think like 3 or 4 years or something. I've been a member. I love it.
I mean, what is it that you love about it? What's the main thing you love about it?
The first thing that popped in my mind, you said that, is the lecturers. I love the lecturers. Such good lecturers. Yeah. And that they just give you the good stuff. They don't faff around with a bunch of stuff you don't need to know. They give you the good stuff on a platter, and you can go in your clinic that same day and use it. That's what I love about it.
And that's why I always say,
just for the record, I get paid nothing to say this in case somebody, you are welcome to give me a discount on my furniture.
Of course.
I get nothing. This is just out of my passion. I have told so many other practitioners to sign it. CHE Pro is amazing. Such good. I mean, you can go and have a look at the content that they've got there. Just so good.
Well, it's like a library. It's like as much as you can eat, sort of library of, I think, 30, 40 courses in there now.
Oh,
but also,
so many. I mean, there's too many.
Yeah, too many. Well, the idea is not to consume it all at once. It's a bit like Netflix. You know, it's like the Netflix of homeopathy, I always call it. But we do it in a way that there's that library. But also now, we do live sessions. Like we do live Materia Medica classes. We do Spotlight where we interview people, a bit like a podcast. But also in September, we are doing clinical therapeutics. Hillary's going to be doing that and Dion Tibret as well. And we've got also clinical casework. So we can bring your own cases for a homeopath to look at, you know, as a very experienced clinician. We've got Jonathan Steinick, who's going to be doing that. So there's going to be something every week that you can attend live if you wish. If you can't, it doesn't matter. It's recorded. It goes into your CHE Pro membership and you can watch it whenever you want to watch it.
What's the promo you've got on at the moment?
Oh, so basically the price is going up. We haven't put the price up for a couple of years. So with the price at the moment is £250 or £250 or $350 a year, US dollars, that is.
Are you still doing your monthly?
No. The monthly, we don't do the monthlies. It's just annual now.
Only the annual, fair enough.
So the people that we used to do monthlies, and obviously that stays for people who are doing monthly, but we only do annual now. And so it's going up from £250 is going up to £397 a year, or from $350, it's going up to $497 a year, because there's so much great content in there.
So much great content.
And we're adding so much more of these live events and things for people to go in. So it's the price goes up on the midnight on the 31st of July. It goes up, or the 1st of August, sorry.
That's good to know. We'll try and get the episode out. The episode was going to go out, I think, August, but I'll push it so it goes out a little bit earlier. But that's really good to know. And I don't really care what you charge. I'll be paying for my membership anyway, because it's been such good value. That Colin Griffith's ancestral trauma course that you've got on there, holy cow, I did that a few months back. It has made such a huge difference in my prescribing. I cannot tell you. I really need to put like a little testimonial together of clients that have emailed me since I've started using like his triad remedies and ayahuasca and clinic and his buddleia. And I haven't used the white chestnut or the red chestnut yet. I need to start using those.
It's amazing.
But it's amazing. And once again, you do these courses and you take out of them what you want.
Exactly.
Incredible.
And also any other paid webinars we do in the future, it's all part of your membership. We get it for free. So we had Gabrielle Traub doing infertility last week. Was it last week? This week.
You had the LAC remedies. I mean, this was ages ago. I saw the email come through for, you know, you can buy the course for the LAC remedies. And I was like, whatever. I've got it free in my membership anyway. I'll just watch it whenever I can.
Yeah, well, exactly. So you get all the future courses.
There's always new stuff and you can just watch it whenever. So that's what I usually do.
Well, we've got the matridonals that Hillary's done. It's going to be going into the CHE Pro library as well in a month or so. So there's so much good stuff in that, as you know, but it's great value. But also we wanted to support homeopaths out there. We wanted to support homeopaths in their practice as exactly what you said, things that they can take and use the next day. You know, you can use it the next day. It's got to be practical and applicable. It's not just about theory, because we want to raise the standard of homeopathy around the world. And you do that through education. So, you know, we've got to be continuing. You're going to be continual learning, continually looking at how you practice, how you can improve it. So again, how can we best serve our patients and our clients? And that's why we do CHE Pro.
I love doing professional development, mostly for those stuck cases or clients that just haven't made a breakthrough yet. It really helps with that.
Absolutely.
So awesome chatting with you, Marcus. Thank you so much.
Thank you. See you the next chinwag.
Yay.